to episode 64 of the Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company, and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. In this episode, we interview Patrick Rolland, senior e-commerce developer at Zero Shoes, about his experience remediating WooCommerce stores for accessibility at scale. Zero Shoes is a massive online store that sells specialized running shoes across multiple global web properties. For show notes and a full transcript, go to accessibilitycraft.com/064. And now, on to the show.
Hey, everybody, it's Amber, and I'm here today with Chris.
Hello, everyone.
And we have a special guest, our friend Patrick. Hey, Patrick.
Hi, I'm excited to be here.
We are so excited to have you. Do you want to introduce yourself, share your WordPress background, any experience you have with accessibility or anything that people should know about you?
Sure. So I've been in WordPress for a long time now, it's weird when it starts to go into like decades. But I've been-
You get built... to a point where you stop thinking you want to share the number.
Yeah. Over 10. I'm not going to say how many. But I've been building WordPress websites since forever, and WooCommerce was one of the first e-commerce platforms I built, websites I built, and I loved it so much, and I contributed code to them, and so I actually had the opportunity to join the team a few years later. I joined the team, I did a whole bunch of awesome things at Woo. I did support and development and product management.
And this was pre-automatic acquisition, right? So this was when WooCommerce was independent.
Yeah, I think I was employee number 34, something like that. So pretty small. I think we grew to 50 and then we were acquired a little bit later. But Woo was where I first did my very first thing with accessibility. I mean, very early on, you know, you go from tables to semantic HTML and you go from inputs to buttons and stuff like that. But really, the first thing for accessibility I ever did was for Woo. And I made sure that you could check out through storefront and WooCommerce on a keyboard. And I uncovered a couple small issues, but this was like, I don't know, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, a long time. And it's really cool to kind of come back to it now and see accessibility being much more fully featured, developed, a thought through practice. So it's really cool.
Yeah, well,
I've done a bunch of other stuff. I can ramble as long as you want about WordPress stuff. I've organized WordCamp Denver. I've ran my own e-commerce sites. I did some marketing for Nexus. I worked at Paid Memberships Pro. And now I'm a developer at Zero Shoes, senior engineer at Zero Shoes. So I feel like I've done a whole bunch of stuff. I could ramble for an hour.
Yeah, and on top of all that, you also design board games, right?
I do. That is my hobby. It hasn't quite come back since the pandemic, but I have two published board games, one I published myself and one through a publisher. So I sell my own board game on my own WooCommerce site, which is cool and fun and just delightful.
Yeah. That's so with that gaming connection, that was actually the reason I chose today's beverage, which is Bishop Cider Skill Check. It has a gaming reference, electronic gaming, not board gaming, but yeah. That is why I chose this today. The art just got me with the retro vibes. It's got the four keys and the joystick, and it kind of looks like an arcade cabinet on the front. I don't know if my camera's really doing it justice here for when we get these videos up, but the other thing that's a fun fact about these guys that I thought was really interesting is they actually have what they call cidercades across Texas. So they're in like five different cities and they have arcades where they serve their cider. So like pinball machines and, you know, old school arcade games and all of that. I have not been to one, but I'm excited to try at some point.
I mean, if it's really good, I think we have to go. It's funny because you bought this and I was like, ooh, of course we always try new beverages, but I had never heard of them before. But then I was taking our daughters to a dance competition and I drove right past it. And I was like, we should go there. I was like, we have that in our fridge. If it's good, come back. I don't know. Are either of you like arcade game? I have hardly played any arcade games in my life.
I mean, no, but there is a really cool, I live in Denver. There's a really cool arcade bar in Denver. It's kind of a little far from where I am now, but literally all the tables have built-in arcade machines. And I've been there a couple times, and that stuff is really fun. I could see it as a fun, I don't know, date night or something.
Yeah, just like a Friday night thing. Go out. Yeah. So this is neat because we're also having the it's prepare for flavor. Is that the name of the flavor? No, skill check. It's a pear flavored
cider.
And I can't remember if I've had a pear cider before. I've had lots of ciders with apple.
So let's crack these open. Get a little sound effect here next to the mic, maybe.
That's my favorite part. I don't know. People who listen to podcasts might hate that, but I love it. So
I don't know.
Oh, it smells very pear-like.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
In a good way or bad way? What do you think?
In a good way, for sure.
Ooh, okay. I like this. It's dry. It's not like really sweet.
I assumed it would be sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, so they have on the, they have a rating thing. So are those 10? Is that a grid of 10 rectangles filled bars?
Yeah, it's a beverage with stats. It's got stat bars.
It makes me think of the like weird resume templates that you can get for Photoshop, where people are like, I have this much JavaScript, and they like fill the little counter. That's what it makes me think of. So it only has a 3 for sweetness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's, I'm sorry, UX problem here. It's out of 9. Why would they have 9 squares and not 10?
It is out of 9. So it's
30% sweet, I guess. It's good.
I mean, do you think they just ran out of space and they didn't want to make the square smaller, so they just deleted one when they were designing the can?
Yes.
I don't know why I expected it to be bubblier, but for me, the thing that I first noticed was that the bubbles are a little understated on this one. Like, I feel like I have some ciders and they're a lot more effervescent than this one is. But I love the acidity. It's got a really nice backbone to it.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, I think you get points for using effervescent. And you're like the only person who says that word, but you say it on like every other podcast episode. Every time I'm like, it's such a great word. Why don't I ever say that word?
Oh, it's that wine tasting background rearing its head. But it's, I don't know. I like it. I would have it again. What do you think about like the apple versus pear? Do y'all get more apple or more pear?
Oh, it's definitely more pear to me.
It's definitely more pear. If they didn't tell me there was apple in here, I would assume it's just pear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other thing that I thought was interesting about it is the ingredients list, hard apple cider first, then water, then pear juice concentrate. Mm. So it's interesting. I guess they make the cider and then they add the pear juice in. Huh. Which is not what I would have expected, but that's cool. Hmm. It does have a really nice flavor, though.
So that means they're not fermenting the pear. I wonder why. Do you think it's harder to ferment pear than apple?
I don't know. That's where my knowledge ends. I could say fancy words first. Like effervescent, you know, but I don't know. I don't know if pears are harder to ferment than apples.
As you can tell, Patrick, the beverage tastings that we have here are very non-technical.
This is the maximum as I go for technical beverage tastings.
Mm-hmm.
Can I transfer to a glass with ice, or is this against the rule?
So would you normally, when you have cider, so you told us that cider is your preferred beverage, do you normally have it over ice?
It needs to stay cold. As soon as an alcoholic drink or a cider gets warm, it's definitely less, it's like 30% less good warm. So I'm going to try to nurse this through the show, and the ice is.
So what color is it? Is it yellow?
This is a blue glass, but it's a bit yellow. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a bit yellow.
Yeah. All right. So, well, speaking of pears, we have prepared some questions for Patrick today. So the last or most recent stop, I should say, probably hopefully not last stop, on your journey through the WordPress and e-commerce space has been at Zero Shoes, recent stop. So we just, full disclosure, finished an accessibility audit for you all, and you're the lead on that project. So I was wondering if you could share some background about Zero Shoes' motivation for the accessibility audit, and maybe take us through a little bit about how this very large e-commerce brand site is all stitched together.
Yeah, I'd love to. So Zero Shoes, and if you haven't heard of it before, it's X-E-R-O. So look up zeroshoes.com, you'll see the site. So we have been in hyper growth mode for basically a decade. It's just been massive, massive growth. And we now have, as of this past fall, have three websites. So we have a US site, a UK site, and an EU site. And we have fulfillment centers in each of those countries. So it's not just, we're not just talking about an online operation. This is, you know, we sell real physical products. We have people, and we have, I think we have another office in Europe, and they do their own customer support over there. So there's, it is a global operation. So it's very large.
They were on Shark Tank, right?
Yes. Yes. And 7, 8 years, I forget exactly when, but yes, Zero Shoes is on Shark Tank a while ago. And that, I think that clearly helped propel us forward. We didn't, by the way, the founders didn't take the deal. So they had a deal and like, no, we think we're worth more than that. And to their credit, they absolutely were.
But the TV progress, like just being on the TV show probably helped, right? I actually think I met that founder. Uh-huh. I was debating if he came to WordCamp Denver or if there was a WooCommerce thing. I sat with him at a table at lunch and he was wearing tie-dye.
Yes.
And was telling us all about running barefoot. And I was just like, yes, doesn't that hurt your feet?
So a
long time ago.
So I don't remember if you came to WooConf in Austin. Did you come to that?
I did.
Because I'm pretty sure that's the first time I met Steven.
So maybe that's where I met Steve.
Yes.
Okay. So maybe it was there. I thought it was in Denver, but maybe I did come down to WooConf in Austin. That was when I still lived in Denver.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure I met Steven for the first time in Austin. So the company's here it's in between Denver and Boulder, but the company's here in Colorado. And I think I met up with Steven once for coffee here in Denver, but I really met him in Austin again, like 8 years ago or something crazy like that. But I think what I was trying to get at is the company's large, and I think we're going from like crazy growth and let's open all these operation centers and fulfillment centers and different websites to, okay, now let's refine what we have. We have distribution across the world. Now let's actually refine what we have. And it pairs in nicely with, I'm sure you're well aware, I'm in a lot of private e-commerce groups and lots of large e-commerce stores are getting these ADA lawsuits. And so it's just, if you get to a certain size, it will become inevitable that you just need to protect yourself from that. It's, you know, it'd be like driving a car without a license plate or something. You know, it's like, you're going to get pulled over. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can go a block without getting pulled over, but you're going to get pulled over. So I kind of think that's the, you just have to do these things when you're the size. So that was why I think that's probably the main reason we started refining what we have.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed any other, because you're like, I have, in my observation, Zero Shoes is one of those companies that prioritizes accessibility kind of without hesitation. You know, there's been plenty of people that we've worked with, like Amber and myself, where there's frequently pushback, like, but our brand, but this platform that we've used for years, right? And I'm wondering if you can point to anything intrinsically in like the culture at the company or certain individuals kind of being the driving force behind that. Like, I understand the compliance and risk mitigation mm-hmm. piece, but mm-hmm. are there other factors there?
And of course, I think the other factors are, I think we have a really sophisticated digital team. So we have a couple people who have been in the WordPress world for a long time, other people who run their own WordPress companies, other people been at the company for a long time and have literally done everything. I think we have a really sophisticated team who understands that, you know, accessibility is important. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, if you break your arm, you're not disabled, but you can't use your mouse for, you know, 2 months because your arm is broken. So you have to use the keyboard. I think many people on the team have had an experience like that. And so we mm-hmm. understand that accessibility isn't just for the X small percent of people who are officially disabled. It is actually all of us under certain circumstances need to have an accessible website. I was thinking of an example the other day of like, you know, you add captions to videos so that when you are in a loud bar, you can still understand what's being said in the video. Or if you're in bed and your partner's asleep, you can still understand the video because there's captions on. It's little things like that that a digital team, I think, really understands. And I think we advocate for. And let me just, we are, you know, we're a company full of people. We have over 100 people. And I think the hardest thing internally for us was the colors, because we have this like bright white on like a slightly light blue background, which I think looks good, but it definitely doesn't pass contrast checks. And I think that's, there's been, you know, do we have to change it? And it looks
changing,
you know,
the brand colors.
Yeah, it's really hard and you're attached to it emotionally. So there is some internal pushback, and we're saying, look, this is just for now. We'll work on a new design for the website, but we're going to change these things immediately. And by the way, we're working on a new website redesign for August. So we really are doing, we're doing the what is it called, remediations now of these are the things we have to fix. And then in 6 months, we'll think through the problem in great detail, and we'll make something better than we had, you know, a year ago.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. A WordPress native tool, Accessibility Checker provides reports directly on the post edit screen. Reports are comprehensive enough for an accessibility professional or developer, but easy enough for a content creator to understand. Accessibility Checker is an ideal tool to audit existing WordPress websites, find accessibility problems during new builds, or monitor accessibility and remind content creators of accessibility best practices on an ongoing basis. Scans run on your server, so there are no per-page fees or external API connections. GDPR and privacy compliant, real-time accessibility scanning. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to a paid version of Accessibility Checker to scan custom post types and password-protected sites. View site-wide open issue reports and more. Download Accessibility Checker free today at equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code accessibilitycraft to save 10% on any paid plan.
Well, I think the other thing I've noticed through conversations with the team is overall, you all are doing a lot of that. Like you were saying, you know, you've grown and you've had these three separate sites that maybe have had different people managing and that sort of thing. And at some point you hit a point where optimization is really important.
Yeah.
And like, I know you guys are doing a lot on the SEO front and just like caring a lot more about code quality. And that's where I think accessibility can come in as well, because there's a lot of overlap on, you know, like we talk about heading levels helps a lot for accessibility, but it sure helps Google understand your content too. Right. And so I do think too, at some point, larger organizations realize that accessibility is just part of having like a performant, optimized website that loads quickly and ranks well in search and helps people achieve the goal of the website, which in your case is buy some shoes and check out. Right. Yeah,
definitely. And I think we're understanding how people use the website better, and maybe this is helpful. So I take the lead on three projects. It's accessibility, SEO, and conversion rate. And you know what's great is all three of those really feel like they're aligned. So anytime there's something with headings that also aligns perfectly with SEO, and I will prioritize that to make sure it gets done, because it's affecting two individual initiatives at the company. But I think we understand, you know, that headings are important. And I think looking at some of the accessibility tools, you share some incredible screenshots. Oh, we have three H2s in the mini cart widget for some reason that someone coded 6 years ago. Let's clear those up. No one needs to see them in the heading chart. And it also improves our SEO, right? So it's really easy to, I think when you have, you know, people from different initiatives, SEO and accessibility and conversion rate, all look at a problem. In my case, that's me doing all three, but when you have someone who looks at those, you have to do it. It makes sense. It makes sense from a user standpoint, and it should also help Google, and it should also help conversion rates.
Yeah. So I'd love to talk a little bit about the audit that we did and some of like the things that we found and that kind of thing. But I think what might be good to kind of talk about is some of the components that are included in the Zero Shoes website. Like maybe you could share theme or page builder or whatever you're allowed to talk about, because I think that's a big thing with enterprise websites is it's not always all custom coded, right? You're pulling in different things, maybe a live chat widget or just different things. And I know when we were doing the audit, a lot of the accessibility issues didn't come from things you guys did, right? They came from a third party vendor. So can you talk or give just a baseline background on how these websites are built, just so people have that understanding before we dive deeper into some of the problems.
Sure. So we have a forked version of Storefront. So for anyone who knows WooCommerce, we forked Storefront, and I'm using the royal we here. Thank you. Yes, the official theme from WooCommerce. But like years ago, like 7 years ago, something like that. That's the most recent version of the website, hence why we're redoing it. But that was the starting point with WooCommerce. And then over like the last, let's say with this version of the website, you know, I think the founder, Steven, who we talked about earlier, and a couple other people in the digital team, we tried a zillion plugins that do all sorts of things from marketing to fulfillment to a lot of stuff with how we process orders and a lot of course, marketing integrations. And I feel like the bulk of what we do is there's a lot of shipping integrations, a lot of payment integrations. There is a live chat. There is a Klaviyo for email. There is...
custom reviews, right? You're not using WooCommerce reviews.
Correct. Yes. We have a third-party review system as well. Boy, yeah. Then we have a lot of reporting that everything gets sent out of WooCommerce into reporting. We have some custom fraud stuff in the checkout. We have some, you know, custom shipping methods. But really, a lot of the stuff we use is, we probably have 100 plugins on the site. You know, I know that's not a good metric of anything, really, once you know WordPress. But there is a lot of built-in functionality from WooCommerce. Just to name one is like, you know, like we have swatches on the product page. That is the built-in WooCommerce swatches extension. So we have a lot of official extensions from WooCommerce that give us the functionality we need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I was saying, a lot of those issues came from vendors. And I'm sort of curious what your experience was when we flagged. So for example, like that reviews or like Klaviyo in their pop-up that allowed people to subscribe to the newsletter or get coupons or enter to win something, right? Like we want to give everyone the equal ability to win something. What sort of response did you have from vendors when you went to them with?
Yes. Yes. So when I got this list of accessibility issues from you, the first thing we prioritized, I assumed that vendors would take a very long time fixing things. You know, probably months is probably a realistic time frame. And so looked through, scanned them and said, okay, I think all these are with vendors. Let's find the vendors. Let's reach out to them. So we've already reached out to the vendors months ago. I would say 2/3 of vendors are incredible. And 1/3 of vendors are probably never going to get their act together, or not never, you know, but probably more than a year would be my guess.
You know, they do the thing where they say, we've logged this issue.
we've logged.
And that's it.
It's worse than that. It's we've logged the issue, but it is not, it's not a priority and we're not working on it in the near future.
Oh, they've even said that.
It's something to that effect. Correct. So two large companies, I won't say who, but two companies that are, by the way, I think they're both public companies on the stock market. They're huge and they do not care. They just don't care yet. I think my personal theory is e-commerce websites are seeing some litigation. They're going to go through remediation. We're going to fix some stuff. And we may end up changing some vendors. And then, you know, a year from now, when some of these companies realize they lost large clients, then they'll care about accessibility. So wait 2 years if you want the large companies to change. But the small companies have been incredible. I am shocked at the number of WordPress plugin developers that have gotten back to us quickly. I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead. I your next question was about if there's anyone I want to shout out. I want to shout out one.
Shout him out.
Yeah, the variation swatches, that's Lucas Stark. He's an official third-party WooCommerce developer. He didn't understand the accessibility, so I sent him the issue. He didn't understand it. I sent him a video explaining the issue. He disagreed with it, but here's what's incredible. He's like, look, I disagree with this. I'm not going to add this to the plugin, but here's some custom code that you can add to your website to fix this. And like, once you implement it, let me know, and then maybe I'll consider adding it. So that's like, hey, I don't know if this is technically correct and I want to add it into my code for everyone. I personally do think it is technically correct, but he still wrote us custom code for our website to solve our solution, which is just magical and incredible. Now I want to stay, you know, I never want to work with another developer for that functionality again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's awesome that he gave you a code snippet to fix it, because a lot of developers would be like, I disagree.
And yeah, that would be correct.
Or they do the thing which always frustrates me, you know, like when you are a developer and you're coming to them and then they're all like, you should hire a developer to help you with this.
You're the developer.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Did you have any of the other like smaller plugins that released fixes?
Yes. So we had a payment gateway, which is not an official Woo one. It's on the WordPress.org repository, but we sent some issues to them. They fixed them. We have a couple more, which I need to send to them. But they fixed some things. And then I think we had, there's at least one more that fixed some things. And then one outside the WordPress world is our chat software. While they haven't fixed it yet, they are actively working on it. And that's a lot of like replacing divs and spans with semantic HTML. But that's actually a lot of work if you've custom classes and the way you write your CSS selectors and blah, blah, blah. Rebuilding your user interface is a big ask, and they're going through with it. So I will give them kudos as well on they haven't crossed the finish line yet, but they're clearly working on it.
That's really good.
Yeah, again, two-thirds of people really, really good, and a third of people probably not going to do it within a year.
Yeah, I mean that just has me coming back to what we've said for a long time, which is, and I think this is a technical majority, if two-thirds of people are responding really well, is that the majority of people understand the need and want to do the right thing. They just maybe don't know what they don't know and haven't, and maybe don't have the tools or the skills or the expert standing over their shoulder saying, hey, your approach here should be different when you're building out XYZ solution.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think at some point though, like I totally get if you are a person who put a free plugin on WordPress.org, you have no monetized version of it. You do you. Investing in having someone audit your stuff, I totally understand why you would not do that. However, I do think there is a threshold where some of these larger companies, including WordPress plugin companies, because there are some WordPress plugin companies that make a lot of money, and they should be thinking about this and they should be considering it. I mean, especially now we're thinking ahead to June 2025.
Yeah.
With the European Accessibility Act, and it specifically calls out e-commerce websites. And we had a speaker at WordPress Accessibility Meetup last week. I don't know if you were there for this, Patrick, but she was talking about, because basically the way that it works is it's a directive that says all the individual countries, member countries in the EU, have to create their own law and their own like ways of enforcing it by the state. Well, Ireland's law includes up to 18 months of jail time for people who work at companies that don't have accessible websites. Jail time.
Yeah. Right? I saw that on Twitter, I think.
I posted about it after she talked, and I was like, what? And I was like, this can't be real. And I went and found the law on Ireland's website, which, by the way, had some accessibility problems. So that's a little funny. But I shared it. And I mean, if you read it, you know, it's not like you're going to get surprised, you're arrested, right? Like they're going to come to you, be like, you have to fix it. Here's your timeline. Right. And it's if you refuse or maybe someone commits fraud and promises something is accessible to the government and then it's not. But still, like, I think a lot of these companies are going to see, especially with what's happening in Europe, like you were saying, like they're going to start losing customers.
Yes, correct. It's not that you will get sued. It's just like, is it worth the risk, right? Why be with someone who opens you up to like seriously damaging your business, your livelihood? And it just, for many companies, it's just not worth it for, I don't know, a FAQ plugin or something. Oh, that was one of the ones that updated their markup, by the way, our FAQ plugin.
Oh, did they?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. They updated their markup.
Oh, that's so good. Because we were having a whole conversation about if they won't do it. I was like, it's so easy to write these accordions. I was like, just use the same short code. You won't even have to go insert your short codes. Write your own plugin. I was like, ChatGPT can do it for you.
Yeah. But like most people are really, really good about it. But you're right. I think at a certain point, people will move away and use more accessible options. And then eventually, a year later, maybe the software will respond. But you know what? A bunch of companies, like WooCommerce, many companies are taking it seriously and are being proactive. Well, there's always going to be people who are slow.
Yeah. So let's talk about WooCommerce a little bit itself, because we on Accessibility Craft, if anyone is listening, this is your first episode. We've had a couple of episodes talking about this because I was going through audits on multiple of our e-commerce customers beyond Zero Shoes. And I was like, I really just want to see what baseline is like, right? So I built us a store that three people have bought things out of whatever. But it was like, because I was like, I want to see what baseline commerce is. I ended up during that process opening 45 GitHub issues for WooCommerce because of issues that just exist in WooCommerce core. So like the answer right now is, could you build an accessible WooCommerce website without writing code? No, because there's problems in WooCommerce. They're still open. They haven't closed them, even though we're talking like 4 or 5 months later from some of these issues I've opened. I'm curious what your experience has been with WooCommerce in general. I know you've opened some issues. You've also been submitting some patches, and I'd love to hear you kind of talk about that, like your thoughts on contributing, like should other developers be doing that? What are your thoughts on WooCommerce as a plugin and accessibility in general?
Good question. So yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. And yes, I did used to, just in case people skip the beginning, I did used to work at Woo. And so I understand a little bit more about how the development process works, have a little bit of insight there. I think the thing to remember is they are dealing with a lot of many, many, many challenges about like which countries are technically countries. I remember we spent
like
months,
for shipping or something.
Yeah, mean? For shipping. And it's like, let me give you a silly example of like, okay, well, China thinks Hong Kong should not be a country, but Hong Kong thinks Hong Kong should be a country. So like, which do you put Hong Kong in the countries list that then people in China are upset? There's just lots of like little, they have to deal with the political ramifications of their code as much as the code itself. But there's also like, we dealt for months with like a tax issue where like the cent, it was rounding up, you know, 1 cent for at a time and rounding down a cent at a time. And, you know, for taxes, it has to be exactly correct. So there's just
at
a lot of
scale that can be
correct.
Horrible,
there's just,
right?
There's a, and there's tax inclusive pricing, tax exclusive price. There's all these million settings that WooCommerce has to make sure work. So they do a lot of stuff. But if you look at their repo, it is, they have many, 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 many issues open in their GitHub repository. And they're just not going to get to them all unless you nudge them or help out. They'll get to the most important. They'll get to the top 5, the top 10%. But they're just not going to get to all of them because they're fixing SEO problems. They're fixing tax problems. They're fixing this. They rebuilt a bunch of their UI in blocks, which is great, right? Blocks are really incredible with Gutenberg and how much it's advanced in the last 5 years. But because of that, they're kind of slow on some of these accessibility issues. So here's what I found worked. Reporting the issues is, they will eventually be solved, I'm sure. And if you reporting the issue, that is the first step. Other people can then comment on them and say, I have this issue too. A separate accessibility audit also found this issue. Here's why it's important. Here's a screen recording to really show you the issue as opposed to writing it down. I feel like movies, like a 10-second movie, can be much more compelling than a 15 paragraph essay about why something is inaccessible. So anyways, you do all that. And then for me, the thing that really helped was going to the office hours where there's a developer who's there to listen to you. They run them once a month. I think it's like the second or third Wednesday of the month. You can look it up on their developer blog. And they had three or four developers at office hours looking at issues. And I asked them about a couple issues, including the ones I opened. And we went through a couple rounds of back and forth revisions on the code, and eventually one of the patches did get merged in. So it's
and that
very...
was a patch that you had worked on.
Correct. Okay. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And I want to fix, like, it seems silly for me just to fix it on Zero Shoes because I have to fix it on three sites, .com and eventually .eu and .co.uk. I would rather write it once in and merge it into WooCommerce core, and then we don't have to have this little piece of code that fixes WooCommerce on three separate sites.
On three different websites.
Which, yes. By the way, then is another dependency that you have to manage on an ongoing basis,
yes,
for every future update. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's just, this is our custom code that we need to make sure it still works with a new update. Yeah. So it's not, it is worth it to us.
Make the world better for everyone.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Website, right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm a big fan of WooCommerce. I just know they have a lot on their plate. There's a lot of stuff they have to do, and I understand why they can't get to it all, but those 45 issues are still open. So if you can write a little bit of code and then nudge them in office hours, that is the best way to move your issues forward. And it's, because I think I wrote the patch and I think someone tagged it, but no one looked at it in a week or two. And then I got on office hours and said, hey, can someone look at this? And immediately, I think that day, they looked at it, gave me feedback, and I was able to move forward.
Yeah, that's great. So Do you feel like it matters at all that you used to work there or no? Like any developer who wants to go help out with accessibility in Woo, if, as long as they go to office hours, maybe it'll be received.
Yeah, it's probably the latter. Yeah. I don't. And I was working with people that I didn't personally work with at Woo, the people who were like reviewed my code. Okay. So it's not like it was someone I knew who was reviewing my code personally. I don't think that was a factor, but maybe it's like, you scan something, you're like, oh, I've seen this person's name 80 times before, he's probably correct in what he's going to say. Maybe it's that thinking. I don't know, but probably not. I think anyone can get their stuff fixed.
Yeah. So a little bird told me that you all have a really interesting approach to programmatically adding alt text to metric tons of images because you're a giant e-commerce shop. Can you take us through how you're doing that?
Yes. So I'm a big fan of, I think some companies, and there's nothing wrong with this, will like pay an intern to, like, if you have 1,000 images that don't have alt text, you'll pay an intern, they'll work on it for a week, and you'll kind of solve the problem to some extent, at least from a legal standpoint, but maybe not the best way to solve it. And we thought about that, like, is it worth paying? Because so I think we have something like 150 products. Each of those products has men's and women's. And then each of those have different styles.
So we're at 300.
But like some shoes, especially new shoes, have like one style. But I think our Prio has like six styles that are actively for sale on the website.
And
so,
styles for us non-e-commerce folks means like colors or something. Like there's some physical difference that would impact the images of the product.
Correct. So I think there's 1,800 product images that need alt text on .com. So it's not just 1,000, it's 1,800 on .com. And yeah, not all the shoes are on all the sites, but it's close to that. Correct. So we're getting close to like probably 4,000 images. And it's like, do we really want to pay someone to do this once? And then it's done poorly. What was great is we've had this awesome new photographer who joined our company a year before I did. And he's had this consistent file name for over a year. So we've been releasing so many products in the last year or so. And I think he's even been renaming some images. But anyways, we've had this consistent file name for a while. We realized this. And so now we can say, oh, this is the front right angle of, and we have the SKU in the file name. So it's the front right angle of the Prio men's shoe. And then we're just, the one thing we're adding that's human input is each style has a sentence fragment that describes the shoe style. So it'll be like with a red strap on top or with a blue sole or like we'll have like, but it's basic, all like 90% of each alt text is automatically generated. And then a little bit of human stuff that we save in the database, export it, add it to the website. We do all sorts of cool stuff. In the end, WPCLI, this is on the website, but we haven't run it yet, but it's there. It's the code's done. But the WPCLI runs through all the images and if it picks up the SKU, if it picks up the angle and it picks up that sentence fragment, it'll automatically write the alt text for all the images. So it took,
it into the database
like and save it into the database.
Normal alt text field.
In the normal alt text field. Correct. So it's not like a weird filter that's being done on the fly. It's being saved into the database. And the, the WPCLI script does other cool stuff. It can show you how many images don't have alt text and stuff like that. So here's the thing. If we only ever had 4,000 images, we probably would have just paid an intern to name them. But we have a product release every 6 months. So every 6 months, we're adding like, let's say 200 new images. Like we're just gonna recreate the problem 6 months from now and have 200 images without alt text.
Yeah. That somebody has to go.
And this is why having systems and measurements and consistency is so important for achieving accessibility. That's really cool. So because you had really consistent naming conventions for images, that's pretty much the only reason you were able to do
this,
right?
Yes, correct. We could not do this if we had inconsistent file names.
So I feel like you need to send that guy a beverage.
Yes. Yeah. You know what? You sent me a second.
You need to send him a drink and be like, you saved our alt text game with your file naming convention. Because I mean, most websites I've been on, it seems so random.
Yeah.
So, wow.
You know what? I think this is the benefit of having someone in house. So because we have someone in house, he cares about getting it right. And you know, the last photographer, I don't know what, but
instead
did some
of just image with a string of numbers.
Correct. Yeah. I think this guy, he just genuinely cares about getting it right, and he has everything organized for his purposes. For the, so I think because he wants everything organized for his, with his giant photo media library in Adobe Air, you know, he wants that organized. So because that's organized, then it's organized us. So hiring people in-house, hiring an in-house photographer indirectly helped us fix our accessibility issues. And now we'll, for the next product launch, we're just going to upload the images and this script. So what's cool is the script started with accessibility and now it's doing other things. It will upload all 300 images, 200 images, and it'll assign them to the products correctly. So we don't have to manually upload images for each product.
Were they doing that manually before?
Correct.
Wow.
So, yeah, so the way this company grew is we crazy growth, and then we did so much stuff manually, and now with a couple extra developers on the team, we're like, we got to start automating. We have 200 new images. Let's assign them to the products automatically. That's step one. Let's write the alt text. That's step two. You know, there's just a bunch of stuff that we can start automating. But we are so focused on growth for so long that now it's time to refine what we have.
I love, though, that like you had an accessibility problem you had to solve and you're like, yes, I'm going to solve this problem. And at the same time, I'm going to make our team members' lives easier so they don't have to sit here and click this button on their mouse, like, I don't know, hundreds, thousands of times in a day before they can hit publish on a product like that. Yes. That is really cool. I love that. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah, you know what? So I went through, what was great is, I obviously wanted to automate things early on, but we just had our spring sale in March. So about a month ago when we were recording and going through the process, I think we spent at least a couple of weeks of a developer's time uploading products, like at least a couple of weeks of it. And when you look at it that way,
the cost of that.
Correct. So like maybe this, you know, this specific technical solution will save 2 days, let's say, but like, 2 days of developer's time is 2 days, and it'll pay forward
thousands of dollars.
Correct. Yeah. And it will immediately get a return in the fall. And then next spring, next fall, it'll just get better and better. So I'm all about that investment.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Are there any other automated or systematized sort of things you've figured out, or other tricks or tips you might be able to share if people are on the front of either like remediating large websites or things where you have many assets or different components, anything that's come up?
I'm learning the power of WP CLI, and I think there's some cool stuff you can do with like just checking your own code, which I've generally not done a good job of, like linting my own code and making sure that it's being written in the correct way. And I think we ran it through some CLI check, and that was really helpful. Learned a bunch of stuff, fixed, you know, there's always silly stuff in there, like white space, stuff that kind of doesn't matter, but that has been helpful, is to get into a more robust way of writing your code. I think,
yeah,
you know,
go ahead. We've done a lot in the last like 6-8 months, especially on our plugin, but we've ended up moving that over into the custom themes that we build for our enterprise clients, with linting for WordPress coding standards, VIP coding standards, and then also doing some checks for accessibility where we can. And we're even having, and I don't remember what it is. I'll have to ask Steve. I wish he was here. He's on vacation this week, having a nice time off. But he even has, like, they're running something locally so that if they, it will lint, not, so he has linting on GitHub PRs, but he also has linting when they commit, like they can't commit even locally on their computers if there's certain problems, because he's like, I'm so tired of seeing this stuff. And honestly, I feel like that really does. It's been a game changer for us, you know, and also with talk about saving time, like reducing human review problems, right?
Oh my
God.
If
you can have an automated tool. I mean, that's a lot of what the idea behind Accessibility Checker was. Mm-hmm. Like, do you really need a person to tell you you forgot to put alt text in this? Like, that's so much extra time for someone to go look at that or whatever the problem is, right?
Yeah.
Like having an automated thing that can check it and catch it.
Correct.
Really can save a lot.
So I'll just share a story of something I've been working on this week. So I told you, I mentioned at the top, that one of the payment plugins fixed the thing for us. So this week I'm testing it, and I think we have test cases written out that a human manually does of like, make sure the payment gateway does this, make sure the payment gateway does this, you know, so it, you can check out on PayPal on the cart page or whatever, all these extra non-obvious things that a payment gateway does. And I went through this whole process and I checked all this thing, and it took me like most of a day. It took me like 5 hours or something, because you have to log into PayPal, log into
Stripe. Yeah, before you can even update the plugin on your live website, you have to test and make sure it's not going to break your checkout.
Yeah. Correct. Correct. You're right. And yeah. And like the business is so large that a single day without the checkout working is like, it's not worth it to the business. Someone should either manually check out or run tests. But the thing that frustrated me is, as I was finishing my tests, a new version of the plugin came out. And so I'm like, no, do I test it again?
That's so demoralizing. Oh no.
Have you seen Playwright?
Well, we're using that on our wholesale site, and we're going to expand it to our .com site very soon for this exact reason. Playwright, yes.
Yes. So Playwright, for the non-devs listening, it allows you to...
Well, and the non-devs in the call, because I have no idea.
You have no idea.
Like Shakespeare, what?
So basically it allows you to create something, and it'll, like in a virtual browser, it'll basically spin up and do actions on a step so you can test for them. We've been building this more into Accessibility Checker because I'll just say it. We've been doing a lot more, becoming more object oriented from procedural code. And in doing that, I noticed a couple weeks ago that several of our rules broke because somebody like wrote the comparison too strict or something like that. And it wasn't flagging things that it used to flag. And then I was like, hey, did you guys actually like, when you worked on this rule, go like, open and like run a scan, right? So I've been building out a bunch of posts. I already had a lot of them anyway from our original, but like this is more set up for Playwright, basically, where it has examples of fails and examples of passes of all the accessibility issues on each page. And then basically when they push code, they can have Playwright spin up, create a WordPress install, add that post, and then it will know if it has the right count or not. And then we know our rule is still working, or the count is wrong, something happened to our rule and it's either flagging something it shouldn't, like a false positive, or it's missing something that it should have flagged. So you've been doing something like that to try and help automate your testing.
Correct. So we're just about done building that on our wholesale site. And I guess the nice thing is we have .com, which is massive in terms of revenue and orders. And we have a couple smaller sites. So we'll usually build something for a smaller site and then port it over to .com. I think, and the other person who's been working on the accessibility has been on a bunch of calls, my teammate Jesse. He's the person who has been leading the charge on Playwright. And we were thinking about, well, when do we want to do it? And we're like, it'll literally, like, if it takes 5 hours to test a payment gateway plugin, and you know, you have to get your sandbox PayPal credentials, yada, yada. But like, if that takes 5 hours, it is worth it to immediately set up Playwright and just test PayPal or your payment gateway. Like it's not even worth updating
everything
first. Even
if that's the only task it does.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like I think on the first time we run it, it will pay for itself in terms of time. So that is absolutely something we're working on. And you know what, like speaking of accessibility and just general HTML, like web development best practices, we don't update our sites enough because it's a manual process. So, you know, lots of, I will give kudos again to Lucas Stark, the variation swatches, two versions before what we have, he's been improving the accessibility. He added ARIA labels and like,
just out of date, right?
We were out of date. So number one, if you know, for people who are listening is like, if you can keep your website as up to date as you can, because lots of plugins are adding functionality all the time, and you might just not have it because you're 6 months out of date. And yeah, it's a manual process, but figure out how to make yourself update your site quickly and easily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good advice, especially because more and more plugin and theme devs are becoming aware of accessibility more acutely than they used to be.
For sure.
So throughout this whole audit and remediation process that we've engaged in together, was there anything in particular, Patrick, that like surprised you or that maybe uncovered something you hadn't thought of previously?
I think, okay, so three things are popping to mind. One, we've already covered, which was I was surprised at how just that even a third of people aren't really interested in solving accessibility problems, or it's so far down their backlog, it's going to be months to a year before they fix it. That was one thing. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that. I think I was also surprised, really surprised about the colors. So the color contrast checker is not, I would say, not visually intuitive. I don't know if that makes any sense, but like there's different ways your eyes perceive things. And just because mm-hmm. your eye perceives it as readable doesn't necessarily means it is according to the standard. We can talk about updating standards. In WCAG, the 3.0.
Yeah, I mean, in WCAG 3, there's a whole, they're going to change the algorithm. Maybe it's under discussion. But
I mean, you know, 8 years from now.
Yeah, eight years from now, however long it actually gets
published. I don't know. Like maybe it's going to be 15 or 20. I don't
know. So
yeah, no, there are colors in that will pass.
Correct.
Currently fail WCAG 2.
Correct. Yes. And I think there's some like non, like things that are harsh on the eye that technically pass. So we changed our white text on blue to black text on blue. And it's a little harsh on your eyes, but it does pass the contrast. So there's just some unintuitive things. And we've talked about this with our marketing team, and it's something we just have to have a couple conversations about, I know it looks fine. It does not pass these contrast checks. You have to, I think it's just going to take some repetition internally to get to that point.
Mm-hmm. I think the colors is always, with all of the clients we work with, that's probably one of the hardest. I mean, enterprise businesses are this way. Universities a lot of times have brand colors. They're like, we've been using these since the 1800s.
Yeah.
Right? Like these are our colors.
Yeah.
And we're all like, well.
That's a whole different conversation when you have one of those. Yeah.
I think the third thing is, we work with a lot of vendors like yourselves, but lots of, we have SEO agencies we work with. And something that's so funny when you work in a big company is people will always tell you this is really easy change. Let me give you one example. One of the accessibility issues could be fixed by updating our checkout. That sounds really easy. Okay, but to update the checkout, I just talked about the update process, and we'll get to that.
Yeah, you and I had a whole conversation where I was like, well, I think WooCommerce core block checkout is way better than your current one. And it's easy for me to say that, right? As the accessibility consultant, I'm like, just switch to that. And you're like, do you realize how, like, you probably have to spend like 5 weeks testing it or something before you can do that, right?
Correct. So it's like, speaking from like man hours of efficiency, it makes sense to like, let's finish the tests on wholesale. Then we know the tests are working, port them over to .com, update everything. And then, but there's also, I didn't realize this, we have some custom shipping methods. We have some custom anti-fraud stuff. So we also need to update those to make sure they also work with a block-based checkout, which they probably will, but you know, it's a big business. It's worth testing. So it's just funny to me how people will, you know, say just update your plugins or something. And when you're at this size, it's like, sure, obviously we need to update our plugins, but also we need to make sure that things don't, things still work exactly as we need them to. And sometimes that takes more time than you think.
Yeah.
What do you think as far as, have you thought about like a full timeline? I know you've talked about there's some really emergent things you're doing right now, and then there's some stuff that it just makes more sense to roll into, which I think is totally fair, into a whole new website that you're already planning anyway. How do you decide on those things?
Good question. So when I was just looking at the list of accessibility issues, we started with vendors, right? Just because those are going to take a while and they're generally independent from what we're doing. Started with vendors. Then it was any issue that affects all three websites. So any issue that affects all three of our websites, I really wanted to look at first because it's like a multiplication effect. We're getting three times the value for me fixing it. And then it came down to like, let's fix the stuff that's like color, like fixing the menu. Our menu wasn't very accessible. We fixed our menu, so now it's keyboard operable. That affects thousands of pages across the site. You know, every page has the menu. So like, let's fix that. I've kind of really enjoyed that. Sorry, I'm losing the thread on what the question was. I got very excited about my answer.
Oh, I was more like on how you prioritize internally. I know we had some conversations about like obviously finding products. Yeah. You can't buy them if you can't find them, right? So the nav menu, the search might be really important. Then like add to cart and checkout, maybe is more important than an obscure blog post that has headings, right? That out of order or images missing alt text, but it's like, well, the blog post is not as important as a product page, like those kinds of things.
And I think the way to think about that is a reverse funnel, right? So if the bottom of the funnel is the checkout and then the step above that's the cart and the step above that is the product page, that's how we've kind of looked at them. You know, again, we haven't fixed every issue in the checkout. We're working on it. But also those are more sensitive fixes. So let me talk about one that's like one that we prioritize that is hard to talk about is we added some icons to our checkout to make it more. So the accessibility problem we are fixing is we have like WooCommerce by default is these little thin red lines when you fill out a field incorrectly in the checkout. So if you put a phone number in an email field, it'll give you this thin little red line. That's not accessible. So we added just like a little red X icon. But because it's the checkout and because we can't do anything that drastically affects the checkout, we are A-B testing that to make sure that for whatever reason, it doesn't hurt checkouts. And it seems like it's about even right now, maybe a little bit negative, but again, we just need more data to make sure that it's not going to harm our checkout. But we're starting with the checkout and then going back to the cart and then the PDP product display, product detail pages, the PDP pages, and then the PLP product landing pages, like the shop page and stuff like that. That and then obviously the blog and everything else comes after. But we did put the header and the footer above that because those are on literally every page.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of starting at the bottom of the funnel. That's an interesting comparison or a way to visualize it. I like that. And
I think from, you know, so there's the legal thing of like, if people are like, that is the, if they literally can't check out, that is the worst thing for you from a legal perspective, but also, you know, you want to have your checkout be fully functioning in every regard, right? No, if your business is to sell shoes, you can't have a broken register. That has to be working perfectly under all circumstances. So it makes sense to kind of fix it first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, the comparison I always use is no store would have a obstacle course in front of their front doors that excludes 15% of customers by default.
Yes. Right. I love that.
So I'm curious as we close this out, because I know we're about at time, is Skill Check or Bishop Cider products in general a drink again or a pass?
I don't know if this is a question for me. I'm going to give it a...
For anyone.
I'm going to give it a medium. I'm going to give it a thumbs in the middle kind of is what I'm going to give it. If someone offered it to me, I would definitely drink it. But... Mm-hmm. I'm not going to like go out of my way to find it.
Yeah, I'm right with you. It's like if this were in an ice bucket at a party, I might grab one if it was like between this or a more one of my go-to ciders is like an Austin East cider. Mm-hmm. But I think for this, like the bubbles is what kind of made it fall flat for me. Like it's just a little too flat. Not crisp enough. And I think it might be the bubbles that did it for me.
Where I landed was it might be fun to go check out the arcade. So Patrick, if you're in Austin, let us know.
All right.
Mm-hmm. I'll go. But I don't think I would buy it again.
I do kind of want to keep a can.
Yeah, like, the cans
it's
are
a very
really
pretty
cool.
Can. Like I want a can just for the coolness. Yeah.
It makes me wonder what their other ones look like. I actually had a thought because I did go peek at their website and I was like, I feel like what we should start adding into these is how accessible is their website?
Oh, no. Well, there's a 95% chance you're going to find problems.
Unfortunately, that is true. But it's been really fun having you on, Patrick. Do you have any big takeaways or final thoughts that you want to share with people who are also going through this remediating large e-commerce website?
I think final thoughts would just be that there's a lot of, like, I feel like on some level, there's still so much work to do. And on another level, like, we solved really big problems really easily. Like, fixing the nav menu was huge. Fixing our colors was huge. So I think you can
adding
make a lot of...
focus outlines?
Adding the focus outline. Oh, my God. Yeah, so, like, there's...
It's like a two-second fix. That one literally is a two-second fix. That's
agreed.
Not me just saying it.
Agreed.
And it makes such a difference.
I understand there's business realities, and if you can't make your website perfectly accessible by next week, I understand that. But you can make like there's an 80-20 for accessibility issues, and you can make your website so much better by looking at a couple like the focus and the colors and making sure your menus navigate. Just I think navigating your website by keyboard is like if you can do that, you're in a pretty good spot. So anyways, mm-hmm. it's not as hard as you think, I guess, is the takeaway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good advice.
Well, it's been very fun having you. Where can people get in touch with you?
You can find me all over the web. You can, my programming blog is speakinginbytes, B-Y-T-E-S, .com. I also have a board game stuff is laidback.games. I work for Zero Shoes, X-E-R-O. And then I also run a podcast on software marketing, plugin.fm. Boy, I think that's most of them. I got more websites, but those are probably the top four.
Well, we will include all the links in the show notes.
Ooh, can I say one other thing?
Yeah.
I am updating my Mastering WooCommerce book. It's a book about how to work with WooCommerce. And because of the experience I've had with you, I'm adding a whole section on accessibility. So I'm really excited to add that This is the second version of the book, and it's nice to have the practical experience and then also talk about it in a there's the 80/20s in the book of these are the things that you should definitely look at. So I'm really excited to add that to the book. And anyways, it'll be coming out in a couple months, but Mastering WooCommerce is something else that you can find that I've done.
That's awesome. All right. Well, we are going to sign off and we will be back for another episode in 2 weeks.
All right. See y'all later.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.